ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 27th of October. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Pedophiles have infiltrated Australia's $22 billion childcare industry by exploiting lax regulation through piecemeal oversight and glaring staff inadequacies. A Four Corners investigation's uncovered almost 150 former childcare workers convicted or accused of sexual offences against children, with more than a dozen currently before the courts. And this has followed a previous Four Corners expose in March. Adele Ferguson reports.
Australia's childcare system is being targeted by predators. A major Four Corners investigation has identified 148 childcare workers alleged or convicted of child sexual abuse or inappropriate conduct. The scale of the crisis has been hidden from the public. We've found right now there are 14 people facing charges, like 26-year-old Joshua Brown, accused of 73 offences, including sexually penetrating children. Nearly three-quarters of the alleged and proven offending occurred at for-profit services. And these numbers are the tip of the iceberg.
Many, many, many cases drop out before they reach the stage where you would say it's in the official records. 84% of victims never disclose their sexual abuse in their entire life. So we think we're capturing just a small amount.
That's Dr. Michael Burke, a world-leading forensic psychologist who's interviewed more than 1,200 child sex offenders.
In terms of how pervasive they are, do we have any idea how big this is?
Estimates range from 1% to 5% of society have some sort of sexual interest in children. That's a scary number. That means out of every 100 people in that church or in that neighborhood or in your workplace, there's someone that has a sexual interest in children. And that's prepubescent children.
Over the years, likely many thousands have got away with it. Professor of Criminology Michael Salter specialises in the study of organised sexual abuse. He says insufficient staffing at childcare centres is enabling predators to abuse kids.
The offenders are giving us the picture. They're painting the picture for us. The offenders are choosing early childcare as a conducive place for the abuse of children. So the offenders are speaking for us. They are telling us that we have a massive problem.
This year, state and federal governments have announced a range of reforms to childcare they say will help protect kids.
Adele Ferguson there, and if this story has raised concerns for you or anyone you know, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. And you can see Adele's report on Four Corners tonight on ABC TV at 8:30 or on ABC's iView. The federal government's decided the big tech companies should pay Australian authors and creatives for copyrighted material used to train artificial intelligence computer models. The government's main economic advisor, the Productivity Commission, had recommended the tech giants be allowed to do that but not pay any compensation. Many in the creative sector described that as theft on a grand scale. The music industry supports the government's decision today. The Australian Recording Industry Association's chief executive is Annabelle Hurd.
It's absolutely a critical step in the right direction. The government has stood up and backed in copyright law, as well as artists, creators, and rights holders. And basically what they're saying is we will not agree to dilute and weaken our copyright laws so that a small number of very large tech companies can have free and open access to very important and valuable cultural works.
Consultations will now happen on how artists will be paid and what process should be set up to allow rights holders to sue companies that don't pay without triggering an expensive, protracted legal process. The Federal Attorney General is overseeing the changes. Michelle Rowland, thanks for joining AM.
Pleasure.
The tech giants, including Atlassian's Scott Farquhar, were pushing the federal government to include a text and data mining exception to the Copyright Act, which would have enabled these companies to use copyrighted work to train AI models freely without any compensation. For a couple of months, the government has let that argument run. Why wasn't it ruled out weeks ago?
We made it clear from the outset, Sabra, that there would be no weakening by this government of Australia's copyright laws when it came to artificial intelligence. And we have undertaken the task, as an appropriate government would, in terms of consulting widely across the sector and understanding that artificial intelligence has great potential but also poses a number of risks and challenges to our existing regulatory and legislative environments. And to that end, there is a body of work to do around what the copyright environment looks like in the AI world, but we are making it very clear that we will not be entertaining a text and data mining exception that gives certainty to the environment, but it also enables the creatives of Australia to have that certainty going forward. And this is fundamental to their right as people who are generating works to ensure that they are fairly remunerated for that and that there are fair terms of use.
This caused a great deal of anxiety because the Productivity Commission recommended that the tech giants be allowed to do this freely. What's changed? What was the compelling argument that convinced you and the government that the creative sector should be compensated?
Well, again, I'll say from the outset that we have been very clear that we would not be introducing any changes that would water down the Copyright Act. And those protections are fundamental to Australian creatives
sector. Sorry to interrupt, but that recommendation was made more than 2 months ago and it's caused a great deal of anxiety. If that's the case, why didn't the government say from the outset
they will be
protected?
Firstly, I would say that the Productivity Commission report remains in an interim stage. They were consulting on that. And we've also had the opportunity to have a number of public Senate hearings on this very issue. And in that time, somewhere around 3 months, this government has been working closely both with the tech sector and with our creative sector to ensure that we have not only the right settings in place, but also the right pathway going forward. And we are convening today, and tomorrow we'll have the reconstituted Copyright and AI Reference Group within my department. And it is very clear that whilst there is work to do there, that is going to be done in an environment that does not involve a text and data mining exception. That certainty has been welcomed by Australian creators, and I look forward to both the tech sector and business and our Australian creators moving forward with certainty on how AI can be best utilised for the benefit of all Australians in future.
What happens for those creatives and authors who do not want their work used full stop? Can they stop the tech giants from using their material? Some have already had their works, whole books taken without compensation to train their AI models.
Well, again, the Copyright Act in Australia is one that is robust, but it is also one that needs to adapt in order to accommodate those challenges of AI. And that's precisely what the Copyright and AI Reference Group is looking at. So, for example, those fair legal avenues for copyright use, whether there should be, for example, a new collective licensing framework or should there be a voluntary framework, improving the certainty about how copyright applies to material that might be generated by an Australian creator utilising AI. But one of the key aspects that has come up in the past few months is around enforcement. So the potential for a small claims forum as an option to better address especially those lower value copyright infringement matters, so it doesn't take the vast amounts of time and money in order to enforce one's legal rights. So the point you raise is very valid. This is an area where the whole world is grappling with a new disruptor that will not go away in the form of AI. But I think what we have announced today is making it very clear to not only the sector, Australian creators, tech, but also to the world that Australia is a place where we value our creators and we will not be enabling the use for free, without permission, and basically without risk of infringement.
It's still not clear to me if authors do not want their books taken full stop, they don't want these tech companies to use their creative work to create anything else, will they have any way or means of saying that cannot happen?
Well, currently under the Copyright Act, there are avenues to be able to do that. But there is a lot of conjecture around whether or not the law is clear enough on that front, and that is precisely what the reference group is looking at. We will go forward as a government with an ambitious set of reforms, again, with the outcome of making sure that our copyright laws are fit for not only the digital environment as they have been to date, but also in the world of AI.
Is there a timeline by which you want this done? And do you think that AI-created books and songs, for example, should be clearly labelled AI made, so that consumers know and they can make that choice to either pay a machine or pay a real life person for their creative output?
Well, on the second point, I won't offer an opinion on that, because that will end up being, I think, not only a question for the reference group, but also a question of legal interpretation. But I will make this point. A number of people whom we have consulted with over the past few months have had a variety of views on that. And these are very valid. They're obviously groups that have been intimately involved with licensing and with ensuring their own copyright protection. So we will let that run. We'll ensure that there is proper consultation on that. But in terms of timeframes, this is one in which we want to get done expeditiously. We should be clear that the Productivity Commission interim report only came out in the last few months. We are 5 months or so into this term, but we know that AI is moving rapidly. I can say that across government and across departments, as across all of the private sector, everyone is looking at the issue of AI and how they need to adapt and potentially what rules or changes need to be put in place. Governments around the world, as I said, are grappling with this as well. So it's something that we are seeking to do expeditiously, but it's one that we're seeking to do in a very informed way. And I can tell you that the collaboration, not only with the sector, will be important, but we continue to have very strong collaboration right across our government.
Okay, expeditiously, do you want these changes before Parliament by the end of the year or by the end of June next year? Is there a timeline?
I'm not putting a timeline on it today. I think that it's important for the reference group to do its work, and we will be in part guided by what they see as realistic in terms of whether changes come forward in tranches. But firstly, we need to determine what those changes will be.
Attorney General, thanks for talking to AM.
Pleasure.
That's Michelle Rowland. We know to expect the unexpected with the United States President. He's briefly visited Malaysia, dancing on red carpet as he arrived. Malaysia's capital, Kuala Lumpur, is hosting a meeting of ASEAN nations, a bloc of 11 countries in Southeast Asia. It's happening at the same time that other world leaders are there, including Mr. Trump and leaders of Japan, South Korea, Canada, Brazil, South Africa and Australia. Mr. Trump's presence has dominated the summit. He claims to have overseen a so-called peace deal between Thailand and Cambodia. Southeast Asia correspondent Tim Swanston reports from Kuala Lumpur.
For a moment, the ASEAN summit on Sunday began in typical fashion, with Southeast Asian leaders shaking hands and giving speeches. Significantly, Timor-Leste was officially added into the regional bloc, an aspiration it has held for decades. Timor-Leste, Asia's newest and one of its poorest nations, hopes that admission to ASEAN will allow it to grow and diversify its economy to benefit its people. An emotional Prime Minister, Xanana Gusmão, said it was a historic moment.
For the people of Timor-Leste, this is not only a dream realised, but a powerful affirmation of our journey.
But then came US President Donald Trump's arrival to Malaysia. Greeted on the tarmac by Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, Mr. Trump danced to the music, pumping his fists, in his first day of a several-day visit to Asia. He comes to Asia as he casts a long shadow over the region, with his protectionist trade agenda and tariffs threatening Southeast Asia's largely export-dependent economies. In his opening address, ASEAN Chair Prime Minister Ibrahim acknowledged these challenges.
Across regions, we see rising contestation of growing uncertainty. These crosswinds test not only our economies, but our collective resolve to keep faith in cooperation
The key event of the day in front of the cameras was a supposed peace deal signing between Thailand and Cambodia. Violence flared up at their border months ago, killing dozens and displacing hundreds of thousands. There's a lot of scepticism about whether this agreement does much beyond the truce currently in place or moves the dial on the difficult and long-running conflict over land along the border. Nevertheless, leaders were effusive in their praise of Mr. Trump, who largely takes credit for brokering the ceasefire. Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim again.
World needs leaders who promote peace strongly. And to achieve that, you have to break some rules.
Despite Mr. Trump's tariffs carrying the potential to harm economic growth in Southeast Asia, in remarks to leaders, he tried to reassure them.
My message to the nations of Southeast Asia is that the United States is with you 100%, and we intend to be a strong partner and friend for many generations to come.
In a flurry of signings, Mr. Trump leaves Malaysia, cementing his style of trade agreements, leaving tariffs largely as they are and locking in purchases of US goods like Boeing aircraft. He flies to Japan and then on to APEC, where a proposed meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping could take place. It's amid this economic and global uncertainty and ASEAN economies looking to decrease their reliance on US trade that Prime Minister Anthony Albanese arrives into the region, flying into Malaysia yesterday afternoon.
We are now in the fastest growing region of the world in human history. What that represents is opportunities for economic growth in Australia, creation of jobs in Australia, as well as a more peaceful and secure region.
Prime Minister Albanese will have a host of meetings, also meeting with Japan's new Prime Minister, Sanae Takeuchi, last night. Also on the agenda, a summit of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, a free trade agreement between ASEAN nations, along with China, Australia, Japan, South Korea and New Zealand. A meeting that holds all the more importance as nations look elsewhere than the United States for their economic ties. This is Tim Swanston in Kuala Lumpur, reporting for AM.
Australian Virginia Giuffre was one of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's most high-profile victims. She took her own life earlier this year and her memoir has just been published. Now in their first Australian interview since the book's release, her brothers have spoken with the ABC's 7:30 program. This report from Alicia Thomas-Sam.
Virginia Roberts Giuffre is known as a fearless campaigner, taking on her abusers, pedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein, and convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell.
I'm really proud of her for telling her story because so many times victims are silenced.
Her younger brother, Sky Roberts, is speaking on her behalf.
She's still speaking her words and fighting for that justice through her own words, even though she's not with us. So I'm really proud of her.
Earlier this year, Virginia Roberts Giuffre took her own life at the age of 41. She had been working on a memoir at the time, which was released last week. It exposes new revelations about the powerful people she says abused her.
I described it as kind of a predator's playbook. As a parent, it's really hard to read. As a brother, it's even more difficult, hard to read.
Writer Amy Wallace worked on the memoir with Virginia Roberts Giuffre for 4 years.
It was wrenching personally between the two of us in terms of her just being able to talk about the most painful things that have ever happened to her.
For the first time in her memoir, Virginia publicly alleges she was abused by her father at the age of 7, a claim he strenuously denies. Danny Wilson is Virginia's older brother.
I confronted him. That's the man that raised me since I was a year old. I asked her years ago, I said, you're going after all these important, billionaires. And I said, what about him? And she said, it's okay, I'm saving the best for last. And here it is this many years later.
Prince Andrew is one of the most high-profile men Virginia says she was trafficked to at the age of 17. Earlier this month, he relinquished his royal titles. Virginia's sister-in-law, Amanda Roberts, believes the prince should face further consequences.
I think the name Prince should be stripped from him and all. So definitely there's more work to do, not just with Prince Andrew, but all those who have been implicated in this.
Virginia's brother Sky says the memoir is heartbreaking, but believes it will inspire victims to find their voice.
It breaks me in a lot of ways. A lot of the details that were in that book are very close and personal. I know they're important to share because I'm hoping that in some ways it protects others that are out there.
That's Sky Roberts, Virginia Giuffre's brother, ending that report by Alicia Thomas-Sam with Thea Dacos. If this story has raised concerns for you or anyone you know, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. ABC journalist Adele Ferguson has spent months exploring Australia's childcare industry, and her findings have been simply devastating. Today, Adele, on her latest Four Corners investigation into how paedophiles are infiltrating childcare centres and why it's so much worse than we ever thought. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.